first baseman, wasn't he?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. He played in 24, but he had a low average for him. Mm-hmm. He's only just a little over 300.
Yeah. He'd come down there from the University of Michigan
right.
or something.
Right. Branch Rickey helped bring him down.
Yeah, as I recall now. But he'd come down and went to play it, too.
I had no minor league experience.
But we had fellows at Illinois, Wally Retcher went to Galesburg back in the Civil Pro days. They had Grover Alexander Day, because he had started his baseball career at Galesburg.
That's right.
So they had an Alexander Day over there, and they had me pitch the game against them. And of course we got along right. They beat us, I think, 5-3 or something like that. But they didn't try to make any big deal out of it, you know.
Well, when you say an Alexander Day, was he in attendance? Was he there?
Grover Alexander.
Right, but he said it was a Grover Cleveland Alexander Day. Did he come back for that, or was just...
Well, he was there. He pitched 2 or 3 innings.
I think he
pitched 3 innings, but definitely round, so everybody got a chance to hit against him with Galesburg. And he was about the tail end of his.
Yes.
But he was with the Cardinals that time.
Mm-hmm.
And, that was in, that must have been in about 29.
Yeah, I was going to guess 28.
I would think so.
I want to say 27 was his last season.
Wally Retcher was with the Cardinals playing the outfield, and he'd been to the University of Illinois. He was a year behind me. He was a freshman when my sophomore year. And then he went on and played after I'd left. And he went to the big leagues and stayed there. That fellow named McCurdy, that was a catcher, he'd been down to the Cardinals. He didn't stay too long. And another pitcher named Jackson, right-hander, when I did at the University. He went and he was with Baltimore in the International League for several years.
That was a good league in those days.
Good league.
Good league, sure.
Yeah.
I should ask you about Tris Speaker.
Yeah, I don't have. He was Cleveland.
Right.
Yeah. I don't remember now. No, I know it. We never. I wasn't at Cleveland. Mm-hmm. I missed Cleveland entirely. Yes. Never. I don't know. He was an outfielder.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I believe he pitched 5 games. For the White Sox. Do you recall the teams? Do you recall the teams that you pitched against?
Well, just the Yankees, the only one I did.
Uh-huh. Oh, just the Yankees, huh?
Just the Yankees, the only one I ever did. And as I say, the only chance you ever got was when you were behind about 10 runs, and then you get in for an inning or two to...
Yeah, mop up a bit.
That's right.
What about the umpiring in those days? Obviously, it was a big change moving from the semi-pro and college ball that you did to the majors. Sure. What differences were there in umpiring?
Well, about the only difference was that I could see is that they didn't call strikes as high up there.
Hmm.
That was always a bone of contention. It seemed like it. You know, they say that the arm guy's supposed to be the top. You know, mm-hmm. Honestly, you wouldn't get a strike if it was over 6 inches above the belt at the boat. They just didn't call high enough. That's all there was to it. Well, of course, in college ball, that way you got dirty strikes clear up. And semi-pro ball, too, you would. But that makes quite a difference, too, because that what we used to call the high hard one, that the one through here, is a good pitch. That's this relief pitcher with the White Sox, you know, that... you know who I mean, that big relief pitcher they got here last year that had the many saves. And,
yeah,
I guess you see him, he throws a lot of those through there. And then the slider low outside. Of course, slider, that's a new term. We never heard slider in my days. We had curveball, of course, and then we...
I've heard it called a nickel curve.
Huh?
I've heard the slider called a nickel curve back in the old days.
Yeah, I don't know. I never heard that expression. Mm-hmm. But that was, as I say, you would there's different ways of throwing your curveball, so you get different results. I mean, maybe a shorter, sharper curve, and then a long, sweeping curve, you know, which I think they must mean when someone's slider, that's what they're talking about. But, and then, of course, use it on a changeup, then it didn't break as much, you know. And I don't see, slider goes. They used to have the old spitball, and then the emery ball. They outlawed that too back for that. I saw a fellow too use it in Selpro ball, and that was a vicious one. I'll tell you, you could take a new ball and rough up a spot inside of the curve or the seam. You know, mm-hmm. a spot about as big as a dollar or less. And then throw it so that rough spot always stayed on one side. In other words, if you had it on this side, you pull the ball this way or this way, and so it's fun. But when it went down, they went on this side. Well, then the ball would break away from that always.
It'd really sail, I understand.
Sure, then if you put it underneath and sail up, you know, maybe even race up, yeah. Put it on top and it'd break down, and you could break it actually four ways. You threw it when you were up or down, you threw it a little more sidearm, see. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I never used it because it was illegal before I started it. But I saw some fellas use it a little once in a while in several pro balls.
Why do you think they made it illegal? Why do you think they made it illegal?
Well, I think, they claimed it's a little dangerous because the way they break in on fellas sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think then, of course, they thought it was a little too much of an advantage for the pitcher. That's what I think.
You think they're trying to elevate the hitting game?
That's right.
And you think Ruth was responsible for that, or?
Oh, I don't know about that. Ruth, of course, had been a pitcher.
Yeah.
And but I wouldn't think that they would. That problem. I think primarily because it was just dangerous and hard to control. And you tell a fellow had a pretty good fastball and throw that in there. You know, it was bad.
Do you still follow baseball? Do you watch many Cubs or White Sox games, for example?
Oh, I watch White Sox. I don't pay much attention to Cubs. I'm like all Sox fans. We don't give the Cubs the time of day. I watch the White Sox. They're playing. It's a good deal.
What are the biggest changes in the game in the last, almost 70 years now?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I think the most I noticed, really, of course, I'm interested always in the pitching and the hitting, mm-hmm. that part. But it seemed to me as if there's more, which I would call, I don't want to call them dumb players, not smart players, put it that way.
Yeah.
Because I see lots more fellas swinging at bad balls than they used to. You take a fellow like Collins or Hooper, those fellas that they played. Why, if they swung at a ball that missed the plate 2 inches, why they think they think that they'd committed a sin. Because nowadays you see a lot of fellas swinging at bad balls.
Right.
Seem striking out on them sometimes.
In the dirt even.
Huh? Yeah, in the dirt.
Ball in the dirt.
Dirt hurts. You don't. I see that much more. That's the difference. Otherwise, the control pitchers are still effective as usual, mm-hmm. as always. To my mind, the fellas with the good change-ups are getting by the best, getting by better than and fellas who keep throwing them in there, bust them in there, because they try to keep them off stride, you know, try to keep them. The fielding is good or better, probably, and the glove's about happy and as large as it used to be. I had an old Bill Dole, so that was the largest glove you could get in those uh-huh. days. I said, you need something out there to protect yourself. but the feeling is good, no doubt about that. And you know, the pitching distance is never changed, 60 foot 6 inches, and there's more fellas have probably fastball pitcher than used to be, because when I was up there, I weighed 145 pounds, yeah. Believe it or not. Now you don't see hardly a pitcher that less than 180 or 90,
right.
And most of them around 200, 220,
right.
225.
They're
big strong
fellas.
Big, strong, sound fellas. Well, they don't have to throw any further than we ever did. But I don't know what, but the batter seemed to compensate for it somewhere or other.
Yeah.
But that's...
I've had a couple of pitchers mention to me that one of the things that they thought is a great difference between, say, the 30s and 40s
mm-hmm.
and now is holding runners on. How did you hold runners on in the 20s?
Well,
and was it different than today, or is it different?
No, I never saw much difference. We tried, all left-handers tried to develop some kind of move to first base. I never had a particularly good one. Get a fellow leaning the wrong way, but I used it. In other words, when you're standing there and ready to pitch, you know, there are certain moves you make first. In other words, maybe your hip drops, you know, or your shoulder drops and all that. Well, we'd try to do the same thing, whether you're going to throw to first base or whether you're going to pitch. So that maybe that's what that would. And maybe you'd look over there at last, then you'd go look there, and then you start your move and look toward the plate, and then sort of first base. See? I mean, that's the way I did it, but I never had a particularly good move. I've seen some real good moves, and I've watched them, tried it, and figured out what the hell did it, but I don't know why. I saw a fellow named Big Tim Merchant. He'd been in the big leagues and got kicked out in the Federal League, or I don't know how it, but I pitched a couple of games to get him up here at Ottawa, and but I was a Mendota. Beat him once, and once they beat us 4-3, we beat him 2-0, and Don Peden, who came to Kewanee, was playing with us there, and he was a varsity left fielder at the university, and I remember him yet up in this game. His brother Butters, who was playing with him too, but had to go on to school. He got on first base and got picked off about the first thing. Yeah. This fellow picked him off. And brother John was the easy. Well, goddamn, don't you know anything? Don't you know how to run bases any better than that? He got on about next, and he got picked off. But I never could understand just how. Of course, he used that full pivot and pitching most of the time. Mm-hmm. I never used that too much, but it's all right. It's good delivery. But I never did. You want to get to start that early, because I think it's hard to develop your control when you got that. I never did.
You said you pitched semi-pro ball for what, 2 or 3 years after the White Sox and Michigan Ontario League, is that right?
Oh yeah, that was 24 when I was there. I pitched then, I played 25, 6, 7, 8. I pitched about 4 or 5, about I'd be maybe 5 years after that.
About till you were 30 and about the time the Depression started.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I was in 28, I was only 26. And I made more money in the summertime the first 2 or 3 years alone, but I made more in the summertime playing baseball. I did in the long business.
What were the fields, the playing fields like in the semi-pros
at that
time?
Pretty good. They had, generally had good mounds. Mm-hmm. That's what I was interested in. But they were reasonably good.
Did they charge admission, or did they pass the hat?
Well, Pekin had some way. I don't know how they collected. They weren't supposed to charge any out there in that park. That park there was no charge for doing at any event. Mm-hmm. But they had some way of getting the money anyway. But most of them were charges. Mm-hmm.
What was the usual fee?
Oh, I think sometimes it maybe as high as $1.50 mm-hmm. cents, so 75. It's, uh-huh. That's where they run. This is back in the '20s, and they didn't dollar went much further than
now. You mentioned several former major leaguers who played in the semi-pros at that time, and can you mention any more? Any more that come to mind? There were probably players on the way down, right?
Yeah, that's right. They were. They had a lot of. They had some kind of Midwest league or something up here in Chicago. I never knew exactly just what it was, but I know they had. It was semi-pro, you might say, or they called a league, but they were fellows that weren't part of organized ball.
Mm-hmm.
But they had good semi-pro teams there. We got hooked up with them down at Pekin to come down there for a 4th of July weekend and played. And they were rough dogs. You had to pitch pretty careful to them. We got along with them in good shape pretty well. But they weren't. They were better than we used to run into around down state.
Yeah.
And they were fellows that weren't quite good enough, or fellows that had their jobs up there that couldn't play quite organized baseball, and fellows like that. And they were, as I say, they had some good ball teams.
Well, there used to be a lot more minor league teams than there are now.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
I think that's one of the real losses that we've had.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that might be one of the reasons we have some of the dumb players you mentioned. They haven't had the minor league seasoning and experience, college and semi-pro experience you've had. They're having to learn on the job, and it's a big job up there.
That's right. Our local, when here was the Peoria, it was a 3-I league, and that included, Terre Haute, I guess, in Indiana, and, Springfield and Peoria and somewhere too, or another near in Illinois, and then a team or two out in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That was a 3-I. That was a Class B league, really. But that's what it was classed as. But I don't. You say they don't have them, and well, it's all the towns around used to have. Of course, years ago, before my time, when I was a kid, they'd open every town of any size had a bad ball team.
Yeah.
They used to play, and of course those were just all home boys that were playing just for the fun of it. And then of course you come and got on with the bigger towns. They'd hire teams, and that part of it. Right, we used to play. Well, we used to play. Pekin, we played Galesburg, and we played Canton, and we played Lincoln, and down at Jacksonville we got 8 down that far, and then we get 2 or 3 teams out of Peoria. They had that Sunday morning league. We get 2 teams out of Peoria, come down there and play. They were the fellows that we were playing with. And we had a good team down there. It was a good semi-pro team.
Yeah, yeah. Did local businesses provide uniforms and equipment, or
I don't know.
Or what?
I don't know who provided the uniforms. We had, of course, you always had your own socks, and shoes, mm-hmm. and sweatshirt, and gloves, and that part. And of course, they had the rest of what they had. But I don't recall now who had the who provided it. I don't know. I never knew.
Had to come from somewhere.
That's and, right.
Whatever. Are there any ball players today that remind you of 20s? Ball players. In other words, any players today that you could say would have been, some people think that the game isn't as good as it was. Other people think that it's a better game than it was 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I think if you could take, you could take the old White Sox team of 24, that was a poor team. And you could pick a half a dozen fellows out of that team, they wouldn't have any trouble playing today.
Yeah.
At least that's my notion of it.
Yeah.
And I'm not so sure that you could take a half a dozen out of some of these teams and put them back in the those days, or they'd get along so well.
Yeah.
But I don't know. As I said before, it doesn't seem like the hitters. They're just up there swinging, and we used to think, of course, fellas I see this too. Fellas would get up there, two strikes on them. You never see anybody choke up with two strikes. They're still clear out of the end of the bat, you know, swinging away. Well, anybody know if you could be a little more accurate and you hit the ball plenty far enough if you choke up an inch or two or a couple inches, you know, or 3 or 4 inches. But it's still a swinging group, and I don't think that's good.
Yeah.
I think smart hitters, they kind of, they don't, the last thing they want to do is strike out.
Right, there's nothing to be gained through a strikeout.
Right.
Not at all. Did most of the players then choke up when they had a couple of strikes?
Oh, a little bit, yeah, a lot of times they did, yeah.
Did a lot of them choke up all the time?
No, I've not said they didn't all did all the time, no, but it was common for to do it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I looked at the averages, some of the averages on that last place team, mm-hmm. which was the 24 White Sox. And, hey, Collins hit .349, and that was fourth in the league.
Sure.
And just ahead of him was Bibb Falk, whom we mentioned.
Yeah, that's right.
Hit .352.
Bibb was playing left field.
Now, I don't know much about him.
Yeah, I didn't. I don't remember, but I don't have too much about him. He was a good, he was a good ball player.
Oh, I'm sure of that. Yeah. But Collins had just what I would think would be a tremendous year, especially for somebody 37 years old. 108 runs, 89 walks,
sure.
42 stolen bases.
Yeah, 89 walks. You know, that'd be sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't see many walks nowadays. It really is.
No.
Pitcher's got to be awful wild today.
With those free swingers.
Yeah.
Whitey Sheila had 95 walks too.
Yeah.
So there were some solid players on that team.
Yeah.
Well, can you think of anything that I've missed?
Well, I can't think of anything to me. You, of course, you, lots of little details you forget about, you know.
Of course.
And I don't think much about it. It's pleasant memories. Some of the things that I experienced, and I cherish very much, and I think how fortunate I was to do it even for a little bit, just as an experience and all that.
I've heard so many players say they wouldn't trade it for anything.
No, that's right. You wouldn't trade it for anything because it's, just like it. Well, you knew people that were very important, of course, and very good, and you had a chance to associate with them a little bit, and all. I enjoyed that, and of course, the university we get that. For instance, I knew Red Grady very well.
Oh.
Knew him. Well, he was this last year of his life down in Florida, but he was about a year behind me. And he was out for baseball, but I was at our tail end. And
I didn't know he played baseball.
Yeah, he played a little bit. He didn't really. He never made it much. He was a natural athlete. That's what he was.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's just an experience that you have when you're just around the gym. Places like down there, you get around the gym, you get everybody acquainted. That's the way you do.
I thought of one more thing I should ask.
Okay.
What about National League teams? You know, you said you were you went around the circuit with the White Sox, and of course, a lot of those times would have in those days, a lot of towns would have National League teams as well: Boston, Philadelphia, New York, and so forth. What about the National League? We didn't touch on that at all.
I don't know anything about them either. I was trying to learn something about the American League.
That was a good answer.
Yeah. So, I never. I think one time we had a day off in Chicago. We went up to see the Cubs play. Of course, they didn't charge us that little courtesy that way.
Oh.
You didn't have to pay to get in.
Did the White Sox return the favor to any Cubs that came down?
I would think so.
Good.
I would think so. But. I never. Otherwise, we never had any connection at all with the National League.
Well, I wasn't sure, but I thought I shouldn't leave that stone unturned,
just
in case.
That's right.
Well, then I'll ask you: is there anything else that you would care to mention that I haven't thought of?
Well, I can't think what it would be.
time.
And I covered my baseball experiences pretty well.
I think you have.
Yeah.
I think you have. It's an excellent interview. An excellent interview.
And, so I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it very much. Enjoyed the game. And and playing around here. And I enjoyed the game anyway. Yeah, but I after I came here and was playing several pro balls, why, of course, they got quite a publicity stirred up by the Farm Bureau, due to what that organization Well, of course, I belong to the Farm Bureau since 1926, I think, and we always belong, maybe it's a matter of business or nothing else. And my folks have belonged. I've raised on the farm where it works. And so I belonged, but of course, they had a baseball team. And they competed with other crowd, you know. And so we had this, Marshall Putnam had a baseball team, which I played center field. I didn't pitch any for him. Well, I guess I pitched one game at a picnic down here, peeking for him with a picnic they had. But I didn't ordinarily. But we had a good semi pro catcher, a fellow who played a lot of semi pro ball, and had a first baseman out of there. They had a Methodist preacher here in town who was a left-handed pitcher, and he'd been in the three-eye league a little bit. And he'd had, he was a preacher. He never pitched on Sunday when he was in the three-eye league, but he pretty fair pitcher. And so they joined, they signed him up for the Farm Bureau, and then he pitched most of them for it. So I went clear down to Marion one summer. And have the state picnic down there. We went down there and we won the state championship down there. And I said, "No, great, never," because by God, we had half of the ball players down there that weren't playing because they were farmers. we used to bunt quite a bit, you know, mm-hmm. and we get it started. And we used to squeeze play, you know, you'd get another team nuts that way. I've seen them, men on second and third, and fell up there in a good butter, and runners would start, fell on second and start, anyhow, for third, and you'd score both runs on a bunt.
Wow.
So at that, the third baseman would come in and field the ball and throw the first, while the fellow that had been on second, he was going to go right on behind him, headed for the plate. But I mean, that's through here or there. In other words, we had just a lot of fun. That's what it was. I mean, up here at the, I think the next year after that, up here at the, they have a celebration of
not an Oktoberfest.
No, but it was.
That seems like a fair.
Yeah, they have a fair there, a Marshall Putnam Fair every year. And so one year they scheduled a couple of ball games up there. And we got beat the first game. I pitched the second game. And this old boy up here, he's up here at the nursing home now, this fellow that was catching for me, he's about 95 years old. And a good catcher. And so anyway, he was a catcher, I was a pitcher that. And it was one of those games when everything seemed to just click just right.
Yeah,
I had good control, and you were ahead of the hitter all the time, and they were swinging at your pitch all the time, see, instead of theirs. And we had a beat 5-0 going into the ninth inning. And the old fellow was managing of it, but we'd played ball with him quite a little bit, the old fellow named Red Williams, an old ball player. And he wanted to play it because he had a goiter that he wanted, and he wasn't in very good shape. But, so he was there, and so he came up to pitch hit in the ninth inning. The catcher came out to me and said, "Let's let the old boy hit one." I said, "Okay." And so we had to beat 5-0, or two, I think one out at the time or two. And so I threw him two or three right out in the middle, about waist high, just about half speed. And he got damn hard, just good back practice. He told him, he said, "You better hit the next one. It's the last chance you're going to get." He told him that. So he hit a ground ball past the third baseman, and he said he, they kids talked about that all winter. So
yeah.
Said the fellow did the hunting. It
makes everybody feel good.
That's kind of, but that was what the kind of a sidelight on it.
Wow, that's a good story.
But they had a, we played Princeton, town of Princeton. They always had a good semi-pro team, and they're the ones that were down there that day. I used to play them up there at, when I was at Mendota, then Princeton. They had quite a little rivalry between them, and they used to bet a little money, too. They used money out. And Fritz Kreisler, who was
famous violinist?
Huh?
Fritz Kreisler, the violinist?
No, this is Fritz Kreisler, who was the director of athletics for quite a long time at the University of Michigan. And he went to the University of Chicago. And he was going to the University of Chicago when this summer he played baseball. In fact, he got done. In fact, they're the ones that turned me in. Goddamn, got me kicked out. But anyhow, he was playing, and he would come from Earlville. That's his home up there, if you know how they are. They're Earlville, then Mendota, then down to Princeton, down to Pomona. And so he went down to play with Princeton, and Mendota thought they should have played with them. And they were mad about it. So they used to tell me, he says, when we play Princeton, he said, every time you strike out Kreisler, extra $5 for the pay. that wasn't overlooked either, you know. So,
was there much throwing at hitters back then?
No. I
guess that was something that came along in the 30s and 40s.
I never
more.
Threw at anybody. I've hit fellas.
Yeah.
But never, it's just because you were trying to pitch him maybe inside, and you got it in a little too much.
Yeah. Sometimes a pitch will get away, and sometimes the hitter's there, and sometimes it's the other side of the plate.
Sure. Yeah, I knocked a fella down up in North Dakota. A game we played down at, at some town down in the southeast corner of North Dakota. I can't think of the name of it now. Fair-sized town.
In South Dakota?
North Dakota.
North Dakota.
Yeah. Right down the southeast corner, pretty well.
I don't know.
But I remember he hadn't knocked him down yet, but hit him in the head. I didn't intend to do it more than at all. Yeah. Tried to do it.
Yeah. Pre-helmet days, that could be pretty serious.
Yeah. But they'd... No, they wouldn't. I never saw anybody at the store with any sort of hitters intentionally. Uh-huh. Sometimes had some wild pitchers. But they probably, maybe one would be at you, the next one would be down in the dirt someplace, the next one over your head. So you'd tell them just somebody that this was wild, that's all.
Did people slide with their spikes high sometimes, come in hard?
Not much of that either. Fellas mostly was predicted the slide, and not to get their toes caught, to get sprained their own ankles or knees.
Yeah.
That's what you had to look out for. But that's it. You live right in Joliet, huh?
Yes, sir, I do.
I thought you said something about Iowa. I didn't. Maybe.
No, didn't mean to.
I misinterpreted that.
Well, I want to thank you for your time and for a very, very interesting time. And this is a wonderful interview. I know that a number of people are going to listen to this with great interest.
Well, that's just about the way it was. Up until the time I was 30, it was quite a little bit of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Or not, and back then. And I didn't, but I even played kickball with the local boys up here, you know.
Oh.
We had a pretty good kickball team. Well, you said that kickball, that's about a half-size ball, you know. Or, I mean, it's about halfway between the baseball and the big softball.
Uh-huh.
And they used to throw that darn thing around and bat it around, and a pretty fair game it was. I played first base for them. And the young fellows all here in town, they all wanted me to play with them, which I did.
Of course.
And I played that for 2 or 3 years, but that was quite a, after it got so you could, if you hit the ball coming up, or raised up, it was easy enough to do it, but that's, I always thought about old Grover Alexander. I batted against him over there at Galesburg, and he threw me a couple of balls down through there, honest to Christ, they looked as big as a basket. And I swung out and missed them both, and I'll be damned if I've often wondered yet. It must have been a ball raised just a little bit. And In other words, 90% of the balls you're swinging at were going down, or mm-hmm. level going down. See? And I can always remember that, my God, that he was, and looked like good balls to hit, you know.
I suppose they were supposed to look like good balls to hit.
That's right. They were. So, that's that. I don't do much here. I don't time. I've quit practice practically. I do a little stuff once in a while with some old friends that I've done something with for a year. You don't. And I started here in 25.
I say you've been practicing law for about 65 years, haven't you?
Right, yeah. And that's a long time.
It is. It is.
State attorney up here, that's up there for two or three terms. Three terms, I guess, was. And I got a son now that came in here back in the 60s. He was out 2 years to go to the Army, and then he was back. And now he's one of the local judges. And he likes that judiciary better than he did the practice. But of course, the damn judges, I tell him they get paid about twice what they're worth. And they're, as you know, they're... Their pension is out of this world. I said, if the state doesn't go broke, well, you'd be all right. But,
Do you have any grandchildren, Mr. Avery?
Oh, yeah, I have. Well, I had a daughter that's married, lived over in Dunlap. That's a little town out northwest of Peoria. Kidder, he's married to a fellow named Kidder, K-I-D-W-E-R. They operate a music business, band instrument music business, and well, then generally, maintenance and all that, and, you know, those kind of deals where you go out, you know, and Johnny wants to join the band, and mm-hmm. he has to have a horn, and well, so they rent him a horn for 3 months, you know, and so much, and he makes it, well, they keep it, and that goes on the pay, and if we don't, well, they turn it back in, and that's it. But they've had done very well with that business and getting on fine. So they have two children.
It's not an easy business in which to do well.
No, well, they go as far east as Kankakee and as far north up at Morris and along through there and over to Galesburg. And it's all right, they get along fine.
Well, our paths may cross then, because that's very similar. Our paths may cross then. That's very similar to what I do. I teach music at Joliet Junior College.
Well, you do?
Yes, sir.
Oh, is that right?
So, that would be your grandson-in-law, is that?
No, that's my daughter and my son-in-law.
I'm sorry. Yeah, your son-in-law, and then our paths may cross sometime.
Yeah, that's right.
How about that?
Little short, chunky fella. Not slow to talk. He's not backward at all. But hell of a good fella. He's all right. And you teach music at where, you say?
Joliet Junior College.
Joliet Junior College.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
They have a junior college there, don't they?
That's right.
And what is your name?
Tom Liley, L-I-L-E-Y.
Tom Liley.
Right. I'll give you a card when I get ready to go.
I'll tell Kidder if I get you, better call in and see you.
Well, I'd enjoy that. Yeah. Any of your children or grandchildren, baseball fans or players?
No, not my name, but the oldest one, the granddaughter, and she's going to Bradley now. She worked there in the office, and her dad, of course, he was probably very prejudiced, but he said, my guy said, she does damn well in the office and talking to people and selling them. But and then the younger one, Matthew, he's on his first year over at Wesleyan. I don't know if he's going to specialize in music or not. He's Wesleyan, you know, always had a pretty good musical program.
Yes, yes.
In fact, that's where Kidder went to school. And Kidder taught band here at our local high school afterwards, and that's how he got acquitted. I just worked with my daughter, but and she went to university. She got her master's in English and that, and she went right pretty well. She's pretty opinionated. I get that from me, I suppose. But she's. And I got a daughter that lives out of Bellevue, Nebraska, if you know where that is.
Yes, that's a suburb of Omaha.
That's right.
The Air Force Base.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, right down along the river, you know. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, her husband was in the Air Force when they got married, and then he was stationed there. Well, then he stayed and went to law school at Creighton. he craved it overall.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're still there. They're still there. They've got three children. They've got a boy how old is he? He must be 15, I guess, 16, 15 or 16. Darn if I know, I lose track of him. And he's got a daughter that's about 12, but a little fella's 10. And the little fella's is a ball player.
Uh-huh.
And I showed him how, when he was back here and he was fielding the ground ball, and I was showing him, I said, you've always got to be in position to throw. And mm-hmm. When you feel that ball, you got to be in position to throw to get rid of it. But of course, I didn't mean anything to him yet. He didn't know enough. But then he sleeps with a baseball glove.
Well, that's a good start.
Yeah.
Do you have any memorabilia? I mean, do you have any things from those days in the 20s? Did you keep any balls or gloves or bats or anything like that?
Well, should you know, my glove...
That Bill Doak model.
That Bill Doak model. My wife gave that Beck was up there at that time.
Oh.
And they put it in their collection up there.
Oh.
I said to her, give her a fetch one, I'd better keep it. But she's going to do that. So that's what she did. I don't have anything else. Everything else is all gone.
Yeah, it passes on, doesn't it?
Yeah, but she gave him that. Oh, we was up there a time or two. Christ, they had my name on the big flash lights about welcome to White Sox pitcher, so forth, the barns. The bank over at Toluca, it was a ticket outlet for the Sox. They used to always have a party over there, dinner there'd be some people down there when they're out in the spring, trailing around, you know, before spring training. Beck was never, he was never down to Lakin, or down to Toluca, but Ollie, what is his name? I can't think of his name now, damn it. He was the manager at one time, a good baseball man, I thought. They should never got rid of him. But he wasn't the manager on the field. He was a
general manager?
He wasn't the general manager. He was fellow that's out, you know, trading and that part.
Mm-hmm. Some front office type. Office, huh?
Yeah. What's his name? Furman. Not Furman. Can't think of it. Anyway, he was down for all that. Beck never got down. Early wind was along one time.
Mm-hmm.
He said, early wind, that's my name, he says. And he says, you know why I'm named Early Wind? He said, my folks only married 4 or 5 months before I was born. Make a little speech at this big, there'd be maybe 100, 150 there, a big dinner. And Luke was a great place for partying.
Are you the oldest former White Sox player?
Well,
do you happen to know?
I don't know, no.
You know, I suppose I could do some research. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case.
No, I don't know. You know, the old style brewery,
mm-hmm.
they got out picture of the old park.
No, I haven't seen that.
Comiskey Park. Well, this was about a year or so ago. Picture of the park, and around the outer edge were the names of all the fellows that had played there.
Mm.
I don't know how many, must have been how many thousand.
Yeah.
But all to clear around the edge over there and up here, it did alphabetically. And there was my name, Robert Barnes, 1924. It was there in the list. And we've got one of them out home, but the barber over here, the great White Sox fan, he's got collected stuff, and I wanted to give it to him. My wife still got that up there, so that was all right.
Okay. Should hang on to it for a while.
Yeah. But the fella, matter of fact, the fella runs this little restaurant and motel and tavern out there at the, right at the foot of the hill. You go east, or you come in from the east.
Yes, I did.
You come down the hill.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you get about halfway down the hill, before you come to the motel, it's right at the bottom of the hill. Well, back up the hill about a block, the road turns off to the south, back up over the hill, and back. We live back in there about a quarter of a mile back in the timber. Been there since 52. I didn't try to tell you to come there because I thought it'd be too damn hard to find. But
well, I had no trouble finding this place.
Yeah, well, I would suggest maybe if you'd take the road right this side of the courthouse, 26,
mm-hmm.
and you've such good blacktop, good shape. It goes up about 7 or 8 miles. You'll run into 18, and then you turn to your right on 18. And you follow that, it kind of winds around up through the timber, getting out into the upon the flat. Then it runs straight right on over to the old 51 or further. But I understand that this new 39, which is a 4-lane road, I've never been on it, but it is opened up. I know it's opened up as far as 18.
All right.
So you can get on that then.
I'll do that.
Then take that ride back up to 80, and you're right in business.
26, 18, 39.
Right.
I'll do that.
Yeah. That might be better for you, or you could probably even shorter, but not a good drive. It would be they take 17th, they're on straight on through to 55, and then take 55 up to. It angles more, you know, 55 angles, but you take it at Dwight.
I drive 55 a lot. I think I'll take a different route than first one you suggested.
Yeah, that's right.
I drive down to Decatur frequently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're. You drive down to, 51, then down to get on down to
Decatur. Yes, that's right. That's right.
Sure.
I do some teaching down there as well. Mm. And